Why Third Text by Rashid Arayan. My continuing and retroactive apologies for all mispronunciations in all of these recordings. This recording, by the way, is brought to you by the generosity of the Royal Nonsuch Gallery in Oakland, California, though they do not take any legal responsibility for the contents of these or any recordings on this website. This essay is from 1987. Why Third Text? Without wanting to repeat or preempt what is going to be said in the magazine, this is from a magazine, we feel that this question demands some initial clarification. The aim, then, is to unravel it without reproducing the familiar intellectual closures of neat explanations and ready-to-wear, in quotes, definitions. The consideration of issues which are socially, economically, politically, culturally, and philosophically intertwined bring us face to face with a complexity we cannot ignore. At the same time, this complexity can only be addressed in its specific manifestations in particular cultural practices. The function of a magazine like Third Text does not and cannot operate according to the logic whereby a solution, in quotes, aims and objectives, is applied to a problem. We refuse to draw a boundary line around something which is already perceived as marginal and contained. We refuse to draw a boundary line around something which is already perceived as marginal and contained, in quotes, outside of the dominant discourses of art and culture. As far as slogans, accusations, and denunciations are concerned, they will be left to those who are traditionally good at them, the functionaries and administrators. From cultural essentialism to vulgar Marxism, from black power rhetoric to the biologism of radical feminism, from the elitism of the North-South dialogue to the paternalism of intermediate technology, from the dedication of the community social worker to the populism of fundamentalists, there is no need to further add to the numerous prescriptions and solutions on offer. But what do we mean by the word third, in quotes, if not what it obviously refers to, the third world? If third signifies third world, which it does, what is the nature of this representation? Is it already defined? If so, by whom? And is it possible to conceive of something around which one can no longer draw a definite line? If we understand third world as a geographical area, as is implied in the slogans of the North-South dialogue, is the economic disparity between the rich nations of the West and the poverty of most third world countries enough to define them separately and differently? How do we deal with the affluence of the oil-rich countries, as well as the economic success of Japan, within a concept of the third world as an underdeveloped identity? Saudi Arabia and Bangladesh, for instance, represent two opposite extremes, and yet they are related through the shared experience of colonialism and neo-colonial domination. Nevertheless, after 35 years, when the term Third World was coined, it is generally accepted that it refers to certain geographical areas and certain peoples and cultures. It has to be stressed, however, that despite the fact that these peoples and cultures share a history of colonialism and are now subject to neo-colonial domination, they still fail to fall into a unified category or to form a monolithic entity. This is the result not only of economic contradictions, but also of cultural differences. It is imperative to abandon the models of binary opposition which impose fixed ordering systems, and according to which cultural practices are classified in terms of same or other. And it is to this end that considerations of art cannot be separated from questions of politics. In the original understanding of the Third World as that underdeveloped entity which was only aspiring to Western models and standards can no longer be sustained. Not that those aspirations have disappeared, but they have become problematized. Can culture, in quotes, be privileged as a more authentic representation? The latter assumption appears equally problematic since it relies on a notion of equivalence, whereby cultures are seen as simply different without attention being paid as to the nature of these differences in relation to the global and dominant culture of the West. Without recognizing the hierarchical structure underpinning definitions of cultural difference, however, it is impossible to account for the almost total exclusion of non-Western artists from the history of modern art. The analysis of the relationships between Western imperialism and cultural identity has for some time been pursued by a number of third world intellectuals. Can a national culture really be achieved in countries where the material foundations of power are not national or depend on foreign centers? That's a quote from Eduardo Galeano. Having induced Indian society into the historical process of modernization, the West tends to deny us the consciousness of it. That's from a quote from Gita Kapoor. It seems essential to locate the specific determinations of domination in the particular characteristics and functions of the cultural practices concerned. What are the effects of specific power relations on the production, recognition, and validation of works of art? Contrary to humanist belief, art is not about human self-expression per se, but requires a market for its assertion as a commodity. Only through its exchange value does it assert itself as a valuable product. Its ideological function is intrinsically bound up with its exchange value. It is both constitutive of and constituted by the position of an artistic practice within its respective discourse. The artistic equally occupies a particular position which is complexly overdetermined by considerations of nationality, race, gender, and class. Specific identities thus established are maintained and reproduced within the institutional context of liberal scholarship in the marketplace. Historically, modern art became truly international with American abstract expressionism and the resulting global homogenization of art practices in terms of styles, movements, etc., also led to the first critiques in several third world countries of international modernism. In many countries, this resulted in a return to nationalist/traditionalist art, but at the same time, it also produced a critical discourse of the globalization of modernism, which played and still plays an important role in the struggle against cultural imperialism. The struggle against post-war high modernism was not confined to the third world countries. It also emerged in the Western metropolis. Not only were black/third world artists denied access to modernism in terms of recognition and legitimation, women and blacks realized that their position in the dominant culture is marginal. It is no coincidence that the black power and the women's movements first emerged in America, with the backdrop of anti-colonial struggle, particularly in Vietnam. It is no coincidence either that at this time, the crisis of legitimation, in quotes, within Western culture began to be generally recognized. The crisis of legitimation, in quotes, in Western culture was a long history. But what is new in its post-war manifestation is a recognition of the lack of positive representations of both women and colonial peoples. This recognition is a direct result of anti-colonial, anti-racist struggles in the women's movement. Neither of these interventions can be reduced to or subsumed within the other, as regularly happens both in feminism and the black movement. While the former tends to sweep the question of imperialism under the carpet of universal patriarchy, the latter easily dismisses the whole issue of sexual oppression as the hobby horse of white middle-class women. This obscures the significance of the historical meeting point of the struggles against colonialism/racism and patriarchy. We hope to develop a common platform for those who are positioned as marginal by the dominant culture. The first issue of Black Phoenix was published almost 10 years ago in January 1978. The three issues of the magazine which were published included important contributions by, among others, Eduardo Galeano, Ariel Dorfman, and Kenneth Coutts Smith. But at the same time, the publication faced tremendous hostility and consistent underfunding. It seems, however, that the situation was somewhat changed over the last years, and that now there is enough support for and awareness of the issues concerned to produce a magazine with the aim of providing a critical forum for third world perspectives on the visual arts. Third Text offers a platform not only for the contestation of the racism and sexism inherent in the dominant discourses on art and culture, but also of those essentialist assumptions which define black art as simply the work of artists who happen to be black, analogous to the notion of feminist art as any work produced by a woman artist. Third Text represents a historical shift away from the center of the dominant culture to its periphery in order to consider the center critically. This does not imply a fixed distance. The movement can be repeated or reversed as long as a critical relationship with the dominant discourses is maintained. In view of the crisis of Western corporate culture, it appears necessary to develop a constructive international communication beyond the intellectual paralysis which has characterized much of Western critical discourse in the 80s. Focusing on the visual arts, Third Text foregrounds theoretical debates and historical analyses of art practice.